I have no liking for Courcy Castle. But it's not the place so much as its people. I'm afraid that I've never felt a very strong attachment to my mother's side of the family. Was never a De Courcy. Always, every inch aggression. I wish I were not here. I wish I could be back at Greshamsbury and with Mary Thorne so that I could tell her over and over how much I love her and how much I want to marry her. Well, that must wait. Indeed, marriage to Mary must wait forever if Aunt De Courcy has her way. Frank Gresham has been told he has a duty to perform. Frank Gresham must marry money.
Dr. Thorne by Anthony Trollope. Dramatized for radio in 3 episodes by Martin Wade. Starring John Wood as Dr. Thorne, Leo McKern as Sir Roger Scatcherd, and Amanda Root as Mary Thorne. With Eleanor Bron, Michael Higgs, Christopher Benjamin, Selena Cadell, and Adrian Lucas. Episode 2.
Well, Frank, she has arrived. Miss Dunstable has arrived.
Has she?
She came by train.
Oh, really?
But she's brought her own horses and carriages with her, and her coachman and footman, and many lady trunks. And her own maid, of course. An exceedingly rich woman, is Miss Dunstable.
Yes, Aunt. I suppose she must be.
£200,000, Frank. That's what her fortune's worth. It will pay all your father's debts and a great deal more. As for herself, she has, I think, quite a distingué air. And though she lacks the features of classical beauty, she's certainly a... But this is a sort of beauty which is also... She would, I'm sure, grace any circle to which she might be introduced.
Oh, I'm so pleased, Aunt De Courcy. Ought I to propose to her tonight?
Now, Frank, it is not at all right for you to be frivolous. I'm doing everything I can for you, taking an infinity of trouble to help you find financial security and independence. Please, remember that.
Yes, I'm sorry. I shall meet Miss Dunstable at dinner, I suppose.
Indeed, Mr. Gresham, heavens, no. I am an experienced traveller.
Are you?
Earlier this year, I went the whole way from Rome to Paris without sleeping. Well, without sleeping in a bed. Have you ever been to Roma?
No.
It is a delight. And the Pope would be the nicest old fellow if he wasn't quite so fat. I was trying to sell the business, you know.
Oh, yes. I do know. Ointment of Lebanon. You were trying to sell it to the Pope.
No, no! No! The Pope was purely clever. I didn't sell it, though. So, if you come across anyone who might be interested, what do you think of my hair, Mr. Gresham? I've been told that curls are not the thing nowadays.
Well...
But I suppose they pass muster if they're done up with banknotes. My lover didn't seem to mind them.
Your lover, Miss Dunstable?
Yes. He's been pursuing me ever since the Saint-Blanc part. May I not have a lover, Mr. Gresham?
Oh, of course you may. I dare say you have a good many.
Only 3 or 4. Only 3 or 4 that I favour, that is.
I see.
But I change them every now and then. It would be very dull otherwise. Do you think Lady De Courcy would mind if the current lot would come here and see me? I needn't say they were my lovers. I could call them my attendant knights.
I don't think my aunt would approve of them, whatever they were called. And,
Yes, Mr. Gresham?
Nor would I.
You? Well, what have you got to do with it?
Well, I'm sure I could serve as your attendant knight as well as any other fellow, if not better.
That is very civil of you, Mr. Gresham. Very civil. But I suspect that your courage is of so exalted a nature that you do battle for each and every damsel in distress, and even for many who weren't.
No, no. I'd be true and faithful to a girl if I liked her well enough. There's not a more constant chap in the whole world. You try me.
Yes. And what if I did try you and discovered that it was bound to fail?
Well, there's always a risk, it's true. If there wasn't, it'd be no fun. It's like hunting.
I see. But if you get a tumble, Mr. Gresham, you can retrieve your honour, can you not? It's very different for a lady. Speaking for myself, I wouldn't listen to a man until I'd known him for at least 7 years.
7 years? I'd have thought 7 days was quite long enough.
Oh, well then, what about 7 hours? Or even love at first sight? Why, there are a few fellows indeed who claim to have fallen for Miss Dunstable before they have even met her.
You are very somber, Uncle. What is the matter?
Oh, nothing, Mary. Nothing.
It's to do with Sir Roger Scatcherd, is it not? Is he very much worse?
Oh, it's nothing to do with him. Indeed, I think he is making a good recovery. He was asking after you when I was with him yesterday.
Well, that was kind. Very kind, since he and I have never met. I should like to see Sir Roger Scatcherd sometime. And Lady Scatcherd, too. Beatrice tells me that Lady Scatcherd, long before she was a lady, was a nurse to Frank Gresham.
Yes, yes, she was.
I'm sure that she and Sir Roger are both excellent people.
Oh, I'm sure they are, in their way. But they are neither of them, I think, in your way. You have been brought up as a lady, and I suspect that you would find them extremely vulgar.
Well, perhaps I would. I wouldn't mind, though. I wouldn't miss polished manners if I wasn't expecting them. What is the matter, Uncle? There is something, I know it, and you shall tell me.
Oh, Mary, my darling, my best of my own, my truest darling.
Uncle.
I was with Lady Arabella yesterday. She asked me to see her so she could talk about Frank.
Yes, Uncle.
Well, she's very concerned about him, about his future, particularly with regard to marriage and money and... Oh, Mary. Oh,
please, Uncle, continue.
She said that she was anxious that Frank should marry wealth. Well, in her terms, that is, which means, in effect, that he must marry money. And... to promote this end...
Yes, Uncle?
To promote this end, Lady Arabella has requested that until further notice, you should no longer be a guest at Greshamsbury House.
I see. Well, if Lady Arabella has any fears about her son... she cannot be too careful. She is, right to do this, quite right.
No, Mary. She is not right. She is a proud, selfish woman who is indifferent to the feelings of others and who cares nothing how deeply she may hurt her neighbours as long as she benefits herself.
She won't hurt me, Uncle. I can live without going to Greshamsbury House.
Oh, no doubt you can. But she has cast an imputation upon you. And that is not to be endured.
Uncle, she has not acted without good cause. Frank has been foolish, Uncle. I said nothing to you at the time because it wasn't worthwhile troubling you. I could do nothing to prevent him. But he said what he should not have said, and he was overheard.
Oh, very well, then. If Frank Gresham is at fault, it is he who should be punished.
Uncle, Lady Arabella can hardly banish her own son any more, I trust, than you would banish me.
Oh, my dearest.
No, Uncle. I am sure Lady Arabella is right. I have, believe me, no cause to complain.
I think you are very much better than you were, Sir Roger. But I'm not at all certain that you're strong enough to fight an election.
Oh, perhaps you're not. They won't put it off on my account, though. And besides, I have an agent who does a lot of the work, fellow named Closerstill. You must have an agent, I'm told, particularly with these laws against bribery. Helps to keep things clean, or looking clean, at least. Well, fit or not, I'll beat Mr. Gustavus Muppet. I'm having a brandy. Just a small one. Care to join me, Doctor?
No, thank you.
Muppet doesn't come from round here, you know.
I gather not.
London fellow. Done nothing for Barchester since he was in the house. Said nothing either. He's a dumb dog. Can't even bark for a bone. And he's a dog that's had his day.
As soon as the election's finished, Scatcherd, if you can't manage it sooner, I wish you'd look again at this will of yours.
Will? Why, it's all taken care of.
But I'm not at all.
Nothing you've told me, Thorne, has made me change my mind about it. When I die, my money, or most of it, will go to my son. And if poor Louis should follow me before he's 25, why, my sister's eldest shall inherit. What's the difficulty with that?
The difficulty is that when you drew up the will, you didn't know the identity of your sister's eldest.
Well, I know it now. She's your niece. She's Mary Thorne. But nothing has changed. Nothing needs changing. Have you spoken to Mary about the will?
I have not. And I hope I shall never need to do so.
Miss Dunstable.
Mr. Moffat, I believe.
Correct. We were introduced some days ago, but I fear I've been so busy with the forthcoming election.
I'm told it will be re-election.
Oh, thank you. So very busy, as I say, that I have not found the opportunity to speak with you again. Miss Dunstable...
It must be perfectly electioneering. All that shaking of hands and kissing grubby babies.
Well, yes.
What's your view about the war, Mr. Moffat?
The war? Oh, well, I'm four square with the government on the war. England's honour. That's my slogan.
England's honour. Yes, very good.
Miss Dunstable, I wonder whether it has occurred to you what a striking resemblance there is between our respective situations. We have each of us risen from the lower class by the strength of honest industry.
They're not necessarily our own honest industry.
We are, each of us, I think I may say, of more than comfortable means. And we have each of us, on account of our wealth, been admitted into the finest and highest circles of English society.
Indeed, and in your case, Mr. Moffat, you are soon, through marriage to Miss Augusta Gresham, to be admitted into one of England's finest families.
Ah. Well, yes. You may have heard remarks made about the probability of a particular event, but in concerns of that nature, you know, you shouldn't believe everything that you hear.
I don't believe much in this world, Mr. Moffat. But I certainly thought I'd admit that an alliance through marriage was imminent.
Perhaps it was more looked for on one side than the other, and therefore was spoken of by that side as if it were certain.
I see.
Miss Dunstable, it is my view that persons such as you and I ought not to allow ourselves to... How shall I put it? To be made use of.
Indeed not.
I have, of course, received considerable help and support from the De Courcy family in the pursuance of my parliamentary career, and I am grateful to them for that. Conscious, too, of the benefits conferred by status and reputation. But it seems to me, Miss Dunstable, that wealth is the more to be prized than status or reputation, for if one possesses wealth enough, then the rest naturally follows. And I am not at all certain, therefore, if I may return to the subject of marriage.
Marriage, yes.
That you and I, Miss Dunstable, should expend our wealth for the doubtful privilege of marrying well-born paupers. People like us, Miss Dunstable, should preserve our fortunes and marry amongst ourselves.
You think so?
I do, Miss Dunstable. For otherwise we will be at the mercy of greedy, if well-born, predators, whose only object is to find the means to pay for their high-priced pleasures.
Well, Mr. Moffat, if I see any greedy predator, well-born or otherwise, I shall be on my guard against him, I do assure you.
Miss Dunstable.
Yes, Mr. Moffat.
I shall be leaving Courcy Castle very soon after the election. It may be a long while before we meet again.
Easter, I imagine, will be the very earliest.
Then I feel I must say something to you now, Miss Dunstable, respecting the two of us, so that...
Stop! Mr. Moffat, I wish to hear nothing more from you.
Nothing more?
Not unless Miss Augusta Gresham is with us when you say it.
Then Miss Gresham has no right to listen to my private conversation.
Then she should have. I must advise you, Mr. Moffat. Whatever you might tell me now, I shall repeat to her before dinner.
You seem to like her well enough.
Oh, I do, Augusta. Miss Dunstable and I are getting on famously.
But I'm inclined to think, cousin...
Yes, Emily?
And Sarah's mamma, that Miss Dunstable might appreciate it if you were a little more quiet with her.
Oh, really? Well, she's not very quiet herself. Seems to enjoy a bit of fun and laughter.
Perhaps. And fun, as you call it, is all very well in its place, but... In general, you know, a young lady prefers a gentleman to be soft-mannered with her. Don't you agree, Augusta?
Oh, yes, cousin, yes, I do.
A young lady likes gentle words rather than jesting. She likes admiration rather than mirth.
That's right.
Ah, well, I'm indebted to you, Emily. Useful advice, I'm sure. How is Mr. Moffat treating you, sister? Is he being sufficiently soft-mannered?
Oh, Gustavus is very preoccupied at present.
Of course he is. He's getting married.
No, no, Frank, that doesn't require much thinking about.
Augusta means with the election.
Ah, yes, the election.
Vote, Moffat! Vote, England, Garner!
Gustavus!
Vote, Moffat!
Moffat! Vote, say, Mr. Moffat!
Oh, Mr. Gresham. Mr. Gresham, this is my agent, Mr. Near the Wind.
I'm very pleased. Likewise.
Well, Moffat, I've won you a vote.
Oh, good man, good man.
Well, whose vote, Mr. Gresham?
A fellow by the name of Bagley.
Oh, the chorister, you mean. That's fine work, Mr. Gresham. The man never showed himself to us.
Well, I didn't exactly meet Mr. Bagley, but I've got his vote, nonetheless.
By letter, do you mean?
No, no. I received a promise from his wife in return for bonnets for herself.
No.
And
no,
also
no,
for her two very pretty daughters. What's wrong with that?
Mr. Gresham, there are to be no gifts, no bribery.
Oh, I thought all that kind of thing was quite legitimate.
No. This election is being held in strict conformity with the law.
By our side, at least.
We must be seen to be safe. We must be seen to be clean.
Yes.
The other day, Mr. Gresham, I was in the Brown Bear and I was dying for a glass of beer. But did I dare buy one? I did not. And why? The publican's a voter. A fellow named Reddy Palm, and buying a pint from him could have been construed as offering an inducement. Mm. So, Mr. Gresham, this promise of bonnets, keep it under your hat, will you?
Oh, right. Now, what's that crowd over there?
Ah, Scattered must be making his speech. Misguided man, he should save his breath.
I have noticed, by the way, that certain artists have been at work about the town painting my portrait. I'm not entirely enamored of the way I'm shown. But then again, there's something about the pictures that I feel quite proud of. Now take a look at this one. There. There. That's me.
Oh, yeah. We can see that.
Yes, that's me, all right. Standing next to a set of lines that's intended for a railway. And holding in my hand...
A bottle of brandy!
Well, yes, I'm not ashamed of that. As long as a man does his work, it's only fair he should have a drop of something to comfort him and to share with his fellows.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but I meant the other hand. I'm holding a hammer, do you see? I tell you this, my friend. I'm not ashamed of that hammer, either. That hammer which my opponent thought would ridicule me, that hammer tells you who I am. That hammer tells you that I worked so as I could get on. It's a true picture, this is. If it wasn't for that hammer, if it wasn't for that railway, I wouldn't be here now asking for your votes. I wouldn't be the fellow who's about to become your representative. The next member of Parliament for Barchester.
You should be making a start with your speech, Mr. Moffat.
Oh, yeah, yes, indeed. I'll just look it over.
I'd have thought you'd have your pat by now.
I've studied it enough. I have the privilege to represent you. A thorough-paced performer.
A reformer. But it'll be 4 o'clock and the polls all closed. Gentlemen, your attention, please. Gentlemen, standing alongside me is Mr. Gustavus Moffat, who has been parliamentary representative for this city.
Yeah, we've tried him.
And who will be once again.
Not in Reagan, Albert.
Gentlemen, Mr. Moffat has a few words which he would like to address to you.
Well, Gustavus Moffat, good luck.
Thank you, Mr. Gresham.
Men of Barchester. For the last... for the last 2 years, I have had the privilege...
Yeah, we've had the hard work!
The privilege, as I say, to represent you in Parliament.
Yes, one of it!
Do you want a thorough-paced reformer? You all know me as a thorough-paced reformer. And...
An upholder of England's honour.
And an upholder of England's honour. Yes, and a thorough-paced reformer.
And a thorough-paced performer! Go back to Dorsey Castle! That's right, try reforming that!
No!
Tell you what, here's a thorough-paced egg to take with you!
Gentlemen,
Oh, dear, what's the delay closest to?
They've had a recount. It's closer than I thought. We got Ready Palm to vote for us, by the way.
Ready Palm?
Publican of the Brown Bear.
What shifted him? Did he hear my speech?
No, Sir Roger, not certain that he did. But he was persuaded, nonetheless.
Silence, please.
Muppet.
Sir Roger.
Silence, please, for his worshipful the mayor.
You think you won, do you?
Yes, I do, actually.
You've got something on your face, Muppet. Egg, I should imagine.
It is my special duty as your mayor to announce to you the result of the election for the parliamentary seat of Barchester as follows. Sir Roger Scattered,
Liberal,
378. Gustavus Arthur Moffat, 376. I hereby declare Sir Roger Scattered
the winner!
You've heard the result, I suppose?
Yes, Frank.
Disappointing, eh?
It is, dear boy, it is. But I've no wish to talk about politics.
Have you not?
Frank, the guests are beginning to go from Courcy Castle, so I really think that you should make it plain to Miss Dunstable exactly what your intentions are. You and she enjoy each other's company, that's clear. Indeed, if I may say so, there has thus far been rather too much boisterousness between the two of you. Too much laughter.
Oh.
All that, dear boy, must be laid aside. It is time for you to become earnest about Miss Dunstable. So I would urge you to go and see her straight away and make everything plain.
Yes, Aunt.
Good. Don't delay. And don't be too noisy.
So, all our jolly sport is to come to an end.
Oh,
I really am a little melancholy about it.
Melancholy? Oh, yes, you look so.
Lady de Courcy must be thoroughly glad that I am going, for I think you and I have got on far too well to have treated your aunt most infamously. I sometimes wondered if she was going to throw me out.
I wish she had done, Miss Dunstable, so that I could have joined you in your exile and shown you how much I love you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gresham. You know, of all my nights, you say by far the prettiest things.
Of all your nights? Must you talk that way when we are about to part?
My dear Mr.
Miss Dunstable, you don't in the least understand what my feelings are.
Well, if I don't, then I hope I never shall. I thought I did. I thought they were the feelings of a good, honest, true-hearted friend. I have become very fond of you, Mr. Gresham, and I should be sorry to think that I did not understand your feelings.
Oh, Miss Dunstable, I wish you were fond of me. Miss Dunstable, give me your hand.
No, Mr. Gresham. No. I see no reason why you should want me to do that. I hope you're not intending to make a fool of yourself.
I am a fool. A man is always a fool when he is in love.
Now, Mr. Gresham, listen
to me. Miss Dunstable.
And please, do not interrupt. You were on the point of making a profession of love. But it would have been a false profession, as you well know. You do not love me. Nor is it possible that you should. I am neither young nor beautiful. I have nothing that could persuade you to love me. Except my wealth.
No, Miss Dunstable. It's not your wealth.
But I rather fear that it is, Mr. Gresham. I like you so very much that if money and money alone were to make you happy, I would heap it upon you.
Miss Dunstable.
But it grieves me to think that you, Mr. Gresham, so young, so bright, should have looked for it in this way.
I have never thought of your money. You are mistaken.
Well, if I am, I humbly beg your pardon. But how can I be? Mr. Gresham, I well know why Lady De Courcy invited me to Courcy Castle. How could I help knowing? She's so much lacking in cleverness and guile that she has unwittingly told me her secret 10 times a day or more. But each time that she has done so, I have told myself, well, Mr. Gresham is honest at least.
And am I not?
I could laugh at her, or at least laugh behind her back. Laugh at anyone who supposed they could get money out of me, who considered me a simple idiot, who was there for the taking. Laugh, for instance, at the Honourable George De Courcy, who, though we have shared the same roof these past weeks, thought he would propose to me by letter, and by letter was refused. I could laugh at them all, Mr. Gresham, because I believed I had one true friend at Courcy Castle who would laugh with me. Oh, Mr. Gresham, would you sell yourself for money? Have you let your aunt persuade you? Have you forgotten your soul?
Miss Dunstable, I have behaved very badly, I know. But I assure you, I never intended to sell myself.
Did you never look at me and calculate me as balance at your bank?
No.
Did you never gloat over me as a bird of prey gloats over some poor creature that will soon be carrion beneath its claws?
No.
Did you never intend to make me your wife?
No. Never for a moment, I sweared.
Good. Good. Then what did you intend?
I suppose that, in part at least, I wished to tease my aunt by pretending to go along with her scheme. I wished to make a fool of her.
Well, there's merit in that, at any rate. And what else did you wish?
Yes, well...
You wished to make a fool of me.
I'm very sorry, Miss Dunstable.
Oh, I wouldn't be. I can forgive that. At least you're not being greedy. There. Good. I think we're friends again, Mr. Gresham.
Oh, I hope we are.
It's so nice to have a friend like you.
Well, you young people?
Well, Aunt De Courcy?
Is everything satisfactory?
Oh, yes, Lady De Courcy. Indeed it is. Your nephew and I have got to know each other so much better tonight.
I am not to marry Miss Dunstable or her money. I gave Mother the news as soon as I returned to Greshamsbury. She was bitterly disappointed. I have also told Father. He was disappointed too, perhaps. But not bitterly so.
I gather, my dear, that the acres of Greshamsbury are not to be reclaimed by the ointment of Lebanon.
That seems to be the case. You take great delight in the outcome, no doubt. You were ever opposed to anything that I or Lady De Courcy might desire.
My dear Arabella, believe me, no one would be more relieved than I if Frank could find himself a girl with a fortune. For if he doesn't, then I wonder how he's going to live. But he has time yet, I suppose.
Oh, he has time, Mr. Gresham. He has time to make an utter fool of himself if he chooses. He shall not, however, be encouraged to do so while he is staying at Greshamsbury.
Frank doesn't yet know, I take it. I mean, about Mary Thorne being required to stay away from here.
Well, I at least have not informed him. And the longer he remains ignorant about this business, the better, I think. He is the sort of young man, I'm afraid, to be particularly excited by what is specifically denied him, and to pursue it all the more vigorously. Do you know yet when he is going to Cambridge?
Tomorrow, he says.
Tomorrow? Excellent.
In the past, Arabella, I don't think you much cared about Frank studying at university. I'm glad you have become convinced of the benefits. Perhaps Mary could be allowed back here when Frank is away.
Oh, no, Mr. Gresham. That would be dangerous, for Frank might drop in on us without warning. No, this is the best course. And if you do not find it to your liking, Mr. Gresham, you may wish to ponder upon the reason why it is necessary, why our son must take such care about choosing a wife, why it is that there is no money for him to inherit. You might also reflect that it was you, not I, who first encouraged Miss Thorne to come to our house and to think of herself almost as part of the family.
Well, I have no regrets in that regard.
And you should remember also that it was you, not I, who made her uncle a friend, taught him to think himself a fit match for the aristocracy.
Now, that is quite absurd.
Our present difficulties, Mr. Gresham, are all of your making. And now you are vexed because an attempt is being made to solve them.
Arabella!
I have a headache, Mr. Gresham. A chronic headache. I'm going to my room.
I said I would write to you, did I not? And I decided that I would write sooner, not later. For that evening, dear Frank, after we had become friends again, you told me of the love you have for a young lady. Dear Frank, though I was never favored in such a way myself, I think
that there must be a kind of heavenly beauty in a love that is young and true. So I'm writing to ask you to be true to your young lady, Frank, if you truly love her. Be true to your vows and never, never forget her. No, Miss Dunstable. Dear, sweet, kind Miss Dunstable. I shan't forget her. I promise.
Brandy, closer still?
I won't, thank you.
Well, I will. Yes.
Thank you, Sir Roger.
And mine. And in truth, closer still, I haven't felt so good for a long, long while. This parliamentary life suits me, I think.
Yes, I think it does. Sir Roger, forgive me. I came to give you some news, and I must give it. You may recall, regarding the election...
Oh, I recall a lot about that. I recall winning it.
There was a publican, a fellow named Reddypalm.
Oh, what of him?
At the last minute, he voted our way. Could be said to have swung it for us.
Yeah, well...
Well, earlier on polling day, one of our men paid Reddypalm a bill that was due to the fellow.
Oh, we should all pay our bills closer still, sooner or later.
We should, yes. But the difficulty here is with the timing of the payment, and with the fact that the money was owed to Reddypalm by Mr. Hughes, the Liberal who stood against Moffat at the previous election.
They're
charging you with bribery, Sir Roger.
What?
It's an unfair charge. It's a malicious charge. But I fear they'll make it stick.
This is all so very hard on you, dearest Mary. Well... It cannot be helped. But it could have been helped, if only my brother hadn't been so very cruel and unkind. I'm sure he did not mean to be cruel or unkind. Quite the contrary. He said things to me without thinking, that's all. And now, as a result, you have been banished. You must be very lonely when your uncle is away on his calls.
Well, just a little, perhaps. But I shall get over it, Beatrice. Here at home, I am monarch of all I survey. And I have you to visit me. And yesterday your father came and said how sorry he was. I suppose what makes it worse, though, is that everyone in the village must know that I've been banished. And must know why as well.
Oh, Mary. How could Frank have behaved like that? How could he? And I do believe there is no change in him.
Is there not, Beatrice?
When he came back from Courcy Castle, he was talking about you constantly. Oh, and he asked me if I would give you a message.
Did he?
Yes. It was very fortunate, don't you think, that you'd gone to stay with Patience's aunt, for otherwise his folly might have reached new heights. Mary, dearest, I would so love it if it could all be different. If Father had money and Frank were free to marry as his heart directed him. As things are, though, it would be utter madness.
Yes.
He said that he would never forget you. That was his message.
Mama, I have received a letter from Gustavus. Mr. Moffat.
Yes, my dear.
He wrote concerning the wedding.
Oh, Augusta, he has surely not postponed it a second time.
No, Mama. No, he has not.
Ah, well, that is a relief. It is very troublesome, you know, to be making arrangements and then unmaking them and... What did he have to say then, my dear, with regard to the wedding?
There will be no wedding, Mama.
No wedding? Oh! No wedding?
No, Mama.
But why?
He does not say. At least, I do not think he does. It's a very long letter, a very elaborate letter, in which he is extremely apologetic, Mama. But I am unable to find in the letter any kind of explanation.
Oh, misery! Misery! I had such hope for you, for your brother, and now... Nothing! Frank is not to marry Miss Dunstable, and you are not to marry Mr. Moffat. Oh, of course, Mr. Moffat is not at all as wealthy as Miss Dunstable, but it would have been a fine match for you, Augusta. It would. You are bearing the disappointment very well, my dear.
Thank you, Mama.
You are not in shock, I hope?
No, Mama. I don't think so.
A good evening to you, sir.
And to you.
Gustavus! Moffat! Mr. Moffat!
Who is it?
Come over here, would you?
Excuse me, but do I know you, sir?
It's me, Frank Gresham.
Oh, Mr. Gresham, well... This is a happy coincidence.
No. Neither happy nor a coincidence. I made the journey specially to see you. And I bought this whip specially too.
What?
You are a scoundrel, sir. You are a scoundrel and a blackguard.
You deserve
to be horsewhipped, sir. And you shall be horsewhipped.
No!
Yes, Moffat. Yes.
No! No! Help! Help! Stop, please!
Stop! I have barely begun.
No! Ah!
Greshamsbury has become very excited about Moffat's horsewhipping. For a while, I gather, the Gresham ladies were convinced that Frank had killed the wretched man. Perhaps it was wishful thinking. And Squire Gresham thought that his son had been exceedingly rash, but at the same time he was exceedingly proud of him and exceedingly glad that Moffat had been humiliated. So much then for Mr. Moffat. So much for England's honour. And as for his political rival, poor Scatcherd has been found guilty of bribery. The verdict has hit him very hard.
Thorn, I was looked at yesterday. Dr. Rearchild came. He said I was going on nicely.
Dr. Rearchild, yes.
He said, I have a wonderfully strong constitution.
Well, that's true. It must be strong, Scatcherd, to take what you throw at it. I'm very sorry about this bribery business.
Oh, I wouldn't be too distressed, Doctor. I'm not. No, I'm well out of it, I assure you. 3 months I was in Parliament, that's all, but it was quite long enough, thank you. A very profitless profession, Thorn. I don't recommend it. Well, anyway, I can always try again in 5 years' time, if I'm so inclined, can I not? No. No, perhaps I can't at that.
I'm very sorry, Scansy.
That was my chance, I think. And because of some publican I'd never met who had an unpaid bill. I tell you, Thorne, it was very, very different being in the House of Commons. Money's given me little in this life. I was no better off, in a way, with my £300,000 than when I was breaking stones for 3 and 6 pence a day. But going into the House, being led up and shaking the Premier's hand now, that was different. I felt I'd achieved something. I really did.
And Lady Scatcherd, whatever Dr. Rearchild may have told you, because perhaps he could not tolerate your grief, is it not better that you should know the truth?
Yes.
Yes, I suppose so.
And the truth is that you must not hope.
Oh!
It would be cruel to bid you do so.
Oh, is there no chance of recovery at all?
I fear not, Lady Scatcherd. Not as far as my knowledge goes.
But if he were to be forbidden his brandy? Well, he's been drinking more than ever, you know, since he lost his seat in Parliament.
Oh, yes, yes, I'm sure. But it doesn't much matter now. He might try to keep down the quantity, but it doesn't signify, I'm afraid. And he will always find a way of getting round you. One thing you must do, Lady Scatcherd, is to get a message to your son.
Yes. Yes, I must do that. Oh, me. Poor Louis.
Where is he at present?
He's in London, I think. Unless he's in Brighton. Oh, me.
You must send a telegraph to him.
Yes. Oh, dear. How will we manage?
The poor boy.
Louis. Yes, Father.
Louis, I've not done by you as I ought to have done. I know that now.
Oh, well. Oh, I shall be all right, I dare say. Besides, it isn't too late.
It is, Louis, it is.
A nonsense, Governor. You could change the will if you wanted. Make it so that I can inherit when I'm 23, say, rather than 25.
No, Louis.
Or you could remove the age restriction altogether.
No, no.
No?
I wasn't thinking about money. There are things besides money which a father ought to look to for his son. Oh, my dear boy.
Our Governor, don't fret yourself. I'm fine.
It's that accursed brandy. That's what I'm afraid of. See what it's done to me?
You'll be well again soon, Father. Up in about a month or so, I dare say.
Oh, my boy. I shan't be out of this bed till I'm put into a coffin. Oh, Louis, I wish you'd promise me you'd keep off the drink. I wish you would.
There's very little I take, Governor.
Oh.
Well, it's just the odd one or two. I'm as right as a trivet.
I must go there again this evening. I'm sorry, Mary.
Oh, I shall be fine. Beatrice said she would drop by. And patients, too, perhaps. Is Sir Roger's son at Boxall Hill yet?
He came yesterday.
Ah, you must tell me about him, Uncle.
Well, his name is Louis-Philippe. After the French king, you know.
Yes.
And he is 21 years old.
Yes, Uncle, but what is he like?
Like? Oh, I don't know. He's like a young man aged 21. No, he is rather short and slight, so he doesn't look much like his father.
Really, Uncle, you are the worst hand in describing that I ever knew. Is he like his father at all?
Oh, yes. He has inherited something from him.
Will he be good at making money?
I would say not. Though he may be good at spending it.
I suppose he'll be a baronet, won't he, when Sir Roger dies?
Yes, I suppose he will.
I wish I'd met Sir Roger. I do so admire people who can push themselves in the world.
Yes. But you will never know him now, my dear.
I think it's a good enough will. It's as good as I can make it.
No, you must alter it, Scatcherd. You must.
Oh, must? Then I won't. Listen, Thorne. My sole concern is for my poor son's welfare. If Louis dies early, why, to tell the truth, I'm not that interested who gets the money. But he'll not die early. He'll live to be 25 and many more years beyond, I trust. You'll help him, won't you, Thorne?
Oh, certainly, if I can. How can I help him?
Use the power that a strong fellow has over one who's weak. Do as you would if you had a son and you saw him going astray. If he were to marry before too long, marry a good woman, I mean, I think he'd fare best yet. But till that day, you must take care of him.
What I can do, I shall. I promise.
I'll have a glass from that bottle there.
Oh.
Oh, come, Doctor.
Will you have water with it?
Water? I shall not.
Yeah.
You have a confounded stingy hand, Doctor, when it comes to brandy. You never measure your medicines out in such light doses. Listen, Doctor. Your niece, Mary. My niece.
What of her?
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll write her into the will. Refer to her specifically by name so there can be no confusion. She'll have the money for certain if poor Louis dies early.
Scatcherd.
But there's one condition. She must marry him.
What?
She must marry Louis. You must give me your word that you'll do all you can to bring about the marriage. And in return, her name will be in the will.
No, Scatcherd.
Why not?
It's impossible. Out of the question.
Why? Why, Doctor, is she such a pearl of such price that a man may not win her?
Well, she is a pearl of price. Of great price.
Oh, I'm sure you think so. But you must have a very poor opinion of Louis if you suppose that no girl might fancy being married to him. Heavens, Thorne, lady to a baronet, 10,000 a year? I mean, what is it you expect for this niece of yours?
A quiet heart and a quiet home. Not much more.
You'll not do this thing for me, then?
There's nothing I can do. Marriages can't be made. Not good marriages, at least.
You won't help me?
Not in this matter.
And by God, Lord, your niece won't have a shilling of mine. Not a shilling, do you understand? I'm going to alter the will.
Do so by all means. I ask that you should. You may well change it for the better. I'll leave you now.
Yes, do. But remember, Thorne, you have deprived that girl of her fortune.
Thorne, I gather that Lady Arabella was here yesterday.
Yes, Mr. Gresham, she was.
And she spoke about Mary.
And she did. The present punishment is not enough. It seems Mary must suffer still more.
I am so very sorry about it, Thorne.
Well, so am I. And sorry, too, if I was short with your wife. To be truthful, Mr. Gresham, I was very angry.
Yes, I can see that you might well have been. And so was she. You will not be surprised to learn that she has decided to dispense with your services.
I would have been surprised if she hadn't.
I'm afraid that Philgrave is to be her doctor now.
Ah.
Of course, Lady Arabella has the best of motives. With regard to her conduct towards Mary, I mean, or at least she feels she has. She wants to do all she can to help her son and the family as a whole.
Perhaps she does. But I do not believe it is necessary in the process to treat Mary with such harshness.
No.
It is one thing to bar her from Greshamsbury House.
Dr. Thorne.
But for Lady Arabella to attempt to interfere in the innocent pleasures of Mary's life, to deny her the friendship of your daughter, simply in case Mary should speak to her about Frank, or your daughter should pass on some word about him to Mary, that is another thing entirely.
Well, Lady Arabella does seem to think that Beatrice may be acting as a sort of go-between.
A go-between? That's quite absurd.
She also thinks, by the way, that you mean to encourage Mary with regard to Frank.
No, Mr. Gresham. I wouldn't encourage her. But I wouldn't get in her way, either.
You wouldn't?
No, indeed. Frank would be very fortunate, in my view, if he would have such a wife as Mary.
Yes. That is, she's a fine girl, Thorne. A fine girl.
But...
Oh, Doctor. This is a sorry business.
And when is the funeral to be?
Friday week. In Barchester Cathedral.
You're being very brave, Lady Scatcherd.
Brave?
Oh, no, Doctor. Though I'm not so bad when there's company.
Has Louis left?
Yesterday. Gone back to London. He has friends there, you know. But he says I may stay on at Boxall Hill.
Well, that's good of him.
For a consideration, he says.
Oh.
I hope he won't give you any trouble.
Trouble, Lady Scatcherd?
Over money matters. You have to deal with all that, I understand.
Yes.
He likes to have money, does Louis? I wouldn't want him pestering you, Doctor.
Well, we'll see if we can each of us be accommodating.
I fear Sir Roger placed a big burden on you.
Oh, there's nothing in the will that he and I have not talked about. Indeed, it is precisely as your husband described it to me some months ago. Nothing has been changed. Nothing at all.
I am at Boxall Hill. I should have liked to have visited here before now. Should have liked to have met Sir Roger Scatcherd. But Uncle was never much keen on that notion. Things are different now, though. Sir Roger is dead, and Uncle says that Lady Scatcherd is very lonely, and that she has asked several times if I might come and keep her company. Well, and without Beatrice to visit me at home, have I not become lonely, too?
Now, what will you have, Miss Thorne? Roast fowl?
Oh, that would be very nice, yes.
With bread sauce. And just a few sausages. And baked potatoes. Or would you rather have them mashed? But if you prefer boiled fowl to roast, I hope you'll say so. And there's lamb in the house as well, you know. So it's whatever you'd like, Miss Thorne.
Oh, thank you, Lady Scatcherd.
And then after the meal, we must put our minds to you going for a ride. The horses, you say, are too big for you.
I fear so, but really...
I don't go riding myself, so I've never worried about these things. Well, we shall have to get you a pony, then. A fine pony.
Oh, Lady Scatcherd, you mustn't go to any trouble. I'd be just as happy with a donkey.
A donkey?
Or not to go riding at all.
No, no, no. You must go riding. Now, Miss Thorne, eat up. There's plenty more.
Oh, thank you. But please, you must not go on calling me Miss Thorne. You are so very kind to me, and it seems so cold to be called that. My name is Mary.
Well, Miss Thorne...
Mary.
Yes. I'm sure I'll call you anything you wish me to, Miss Thorne. And I do think Mary is the prettiest name in all the English language. My dear Roger loved that name.
Did he? Why?
He had a sister called Mary. Such a beautiful creature she was. And truth to tell, Miss Thorne, you are not at all unlike her.
Here we are, my lady.
Oh, look, Miss Thorne, look.
Oh, Lady Scatcherd.
Well, you said you'd be happiest with the donkeys.
Yes, I did. You are so very kind.
She seems peaceful enough, doesn't she?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, please, my lady, it's a he.
A he? Oh, the he's are as quiet as the she's, I hope.
Oh, deal quieter, my lady, all the world over.
And the twice as useful. That's good. That's very good. Do you think you'll be happy with her, Miss Thorne?
Him, my lady.
Him. Yes.
I think I'll be very happy, Lady Scatcherd.
Shall I leave him with you, miss?
Oh, yes, please.
He and I must make ourselves acquainted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, miss. Thank you, my lady. I just like being called my lady. I think people call me it to make fun of me.
Oh, no, I'm sure.
Oh, I'd rather not be made a fool of for all the days of my life. Perhaps I'll drop it. Stop being a lady, you know.
Oh, but Lady Scatcherd, you mustn't think of such a thing. For the sake of your husband's memory, for the sake of all he achieved, you should be proud of the title. You must be my lady, and I must be Mary. Goodness, who can this be?
Her ladyship has gone to bed, Sir Louis. I fear we were not expecting you, my lord.
Well, I plan to be in Brighton, but I'm feeling a little out of sorts.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that, my lord. Oh, by the way, we have a visitor.
A visitor?
Yes, my lord.
Ah, indeed. A visitor.
Good evening.
And to you too.
You are Louis Philippe, I think.
I am.
My name is Mary Thorne, sir. Your lordship. I believe you know my uncle, Dr. Thorne.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm beginning to know him quite well. He's been up to London, bothering me.
I think he's been very concerned about your health.
Well, perhaps. And I wish he'd be more concerned about my income. He holds the purse strings, you see, and has them tied a good deal too tight for my liking. Well, you're staying here, I take it?
Yes. Your mother has been very kind to me, and very generous.
Well, I'm sure. Well, this is an unexpected pleasure. I trust you'll be staying a while.
I'm not certain.
Oh, but you must, by Jove. Well, you must stay a good, long while.
Must I, Sir Louis?
Oh, yes, indeed, Miss Thorne. Oh, long enough, at least, for you and me to become thoroughly well acquainted. Do you know, I wasn't too excited about coming to this place again. But now, I think, the prospect is a great deal improved.
That was episode 2 of Dr. Thorne by Anthony Trollope, dramatized for radio by Martin Wade. Dr. Thorne was played by John Wood, and Sir Roger Scatcherd by Leo McKern. Mary was played by Amanda Root, Lady Arabella by Ellen LeBron, Frank Gresham by Michael Higgs, Miss Dunstable by Selena Cadell, Louis Scatcherd by Adrian Lucas, Squire Gresham by Christopher Benjamin, Lady De Courcy by Anne Beach, Beatrice by Colleen Prendergast, Augusta by Jane Wittenshaw, Lady Emily by Julie Mears, and Lady Scatcherd by Tessa Worsley, with Stephen Critchlow, David Simpson, and Jonathan Adams. Dr. Thorne was directed by Cherry Cookson.